I'm not sure if I mentioned it before, but when my friend Clay Mason Bannerman and I want to impress our new lady friends, Tiffer and Mickey, we don't even have to take them to a restaurant. That's because we have an entire freezer stocked full of ButcherBox, and that includes high-quality meat and seafood that we can trust. It's so convenient. It's delivered right to our doorstep, and there's always free shipping. I mean, where else can you get free protein for a whole year? Tiffer and Mickey love it, and so will you. At least one of them is always around asking when the new ButcherBox is arriving. Sign up at butcherbox.com/mega and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/mega and use code MEGA to choose your free for a year offer plus $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox.
When you listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast, you get a belly full of laughs and a head full of real information. Our gallimaufry of expert guests answer questions on stuff adults need to know. I have mold in my dwelling. What do I do? What's gerrymandering? What happens chemically when I fall in love? How do I handle a parent-teacher conference? What are microbes? Listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Solve problems, get laughs.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
We're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay.
Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Mega is an improvised satire from the staff of a fictional mega church.
Hiya, this is Day Labonte, and I'm hijacking Mega the Podcast one more time from Twin Hills Community Church because I have a guest today that I feel like my mom's audience would be very interested in a good way, definitely in a good way. And I'm very excited to introduce today Dr. Laura Anderson, who founded the Religious Trauma Institute, and she runs the Center for Trauma Resolution and Recovery, which are a bunch of words that like mean a lot to people like me and hopefully you, dear listener, who are on a journey of coming to understand ourselves and what the heck we're doing here on this planet Earth and why it feels so hard sometimes. And I'm just really glad to talk to you, Dr. Laura. Welcome to the program. Is that what I should call you, Dr. Laura, or what do you go by?
Well, thank you for having me, Day. You can call me Dr. Laura, but, you know, I think we're going to be friends. So why don't you just call me Laura?
Laura. Okay. That's really cool. Okay, Laura, thank you so much for coming on because I feel like you have a bunch of stuff in your head that I want to download into my head and into the head of other people who might have grown up like you and me, where we grew up in church culture and it was just the most important thing in the whole world to our parents and to us, or what our parents impress upon us is that the church and the work of Jesus Christ is very pressing and important. And in fact, it's more important than anything in the whole world. In fact, my mom has always told me that Jesus is first, her family is second. No, Jesus is first, my dad, her husband is second, and the kids are third. And I'm always like, oh man. And I give her a hard time because I'm like, I don't like being last. You know, she says there's no disputing like that Jesus is first. Were your parents like that?
Yeah. I actually just posted something on social media yesterday, and it's this acronym that I learned: joy, Jesus first, others second, yourself last.
Barf.
So that's how I grew up. I know, right? It is. It's so gross. Or I don't know if you grew up with this, but I also had this design called the Umbrella of Protection, where there was an umbrella of God and then your parent, the husband, and then the wife, and then the kids. And so I get it. I'm really used to being at the bottom or last.
Yeah. And in fact, it's like celebrated in the church.
It is.
To be selfless. Mm-hmm. If you're number two on the Enneagram, it's like, oh, awesome. You so naturally like put yourself last and take care of everyone else. And like that is the high value. And then you get on social media as you start to grow up, and social media and other people are like, no, you really have to like take care of yourself first or you're no good for anybody else. And that like feels like opposite day to the Christian mind.
Yeah, it's very opposite. I'm curious, are you a two on the Enneagram?
I'm a seven. I'm the enthusiast.
Okay.
I really wanted to be a four. I really wanted to be the artist because I think I'm an artist and I do like to draw a lot. And sometimes I write poetry, but I won't ever let anybody ever see it. But what are you?
Well, you might be a little bit jealous because I am a four.
I'm jealous.
Yeah.
I'm jealous. But does that make you moody and sad to be a four?
You know, it's interesting that you ask, because I used to think that being a four would be the worst number ever because, yeah, we're like pretty moody and sometimes we can be self-absorbed, which of course, like you just said, that's kind of the opposite of what we were taught, right? We weren't supposed to be self-absorbed. We were supposed to be thinking about other people. So for me, I learned how to shut it all down and I just kind of closed up those parts of myself. But then it also meant that I closed up all the creativity, all of the innovation that a lot of fours have. Yep. Right. And so I just kind of, if I like cut myself off at the neck, I just kind of live from my head. And so interestingly, it was actually some relationships with sevens that got me back into my body and having fun that I could be creative again. And here we are.
Facts. Okay.
Yeah.
So for anybody listening, the Enneagram, if you don't know it, I like it because it looks like a pentagram. So it feels already like a Christian is doing something subversive because it looks like a pentagram. And it basically is a personality thing like Myers-Briggs or whatever, but it assigns you a number and there's like nine personality types. And for some reason, it looks like a pentagram, but Christians like it. So I was like, okay, let's go.
So it's like you're tricking your mom.
Exactly. So, okay, Laura.
I love it.
Laura, this is really exciting because you have a book that just came out and it's called When Religion Hurts You, right?
It is. Yes, absolutely. When Religion Hurts You, Healing from Religious Trauma and the Impact of High Control Religion, which sounds like you know something about.
I'm starting to be very interested in it, in fact. So, but do you get people who get pissed about that? Because Christians don't want to believe that their belief system could ever be part and parcel of something harmful because they're like, this is 1000% helpful for all people for all time. Mm-hmm. So are they getting pissed about the title or content of your book?
Well, you know, since it's not quite published yet, I don't know, but I am getting prepared because I think you're absolutely right. There's a lot of people that would use what we call like whataboutism. So what about this? What about that? Or not all Christians, right? And so I think that there's going to be some pushback. And I've already had some people that are close to me who are still a part of religion or churches that are pretty skeptical and not super duper happy that I'm writing about this because they feel like I am, you know, kind of ripping down the church, or maybe I'm, you know, speaking poorly about things that you and I both grew up being taught, and they still believe it. They still think it's right. They still think that this is the truth. And so I've gotten a little bit of pushback and I'm prepared for more.
Oh yeah. You're going to have a thick skin. So when does it come out?
So it comes out in October. So October 17th.
October 17th.
Of this year.
When Religion Hurts You, from Dr. Laura Anderson, where she's going to help you f***ing help yourself. or she's going to piss you off because it's sometimes hard to be a well-meaning person and discover that you still have maybe unintentionally hurt somebody. But that happens when human beings are all alive. We're going to bump up against each other and occasionally bruise each other. And that's something I've been thinking about a lot, Laura, is that like we kind of have a culture now, like cancel culture makes everyone scared, blah, blah, blah. But we sort of have a culture now where like nobody is allowed to be wrong. Like, you know, politicians and everything, it's just a big PR machine where it's like, oh, I did something bad. We'll set things in motion to make it as if it didn't happen, rather than kind of like what I think used to be in like old Jewish customs of like, there are steps that we do to reconcile when we hurt someone and stuff. But doesn't it feel like we can't even admit when we're wrong now? So that then there's no even opportunity for reconciliation.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
About like the way we grew up, and we were taught about the Bible, and it's true, and everything in it is true. If we go back to the very beginning, I think we see the first instance of cancel culture.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Adam and Eve.
Whoa, facts. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Did something wrong.
Passed out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And not only that, then the rest of humanity is suffering as a result. And it's the same, you know, we have kind of some of the same consequences.
Whoa, yeah.
Yeah. I think that cancel culture is pretty big within churches as well, except Whoa. That they say that it is godly, right? It's something that we do to teach people a lesson to bring them back to God.
Whoa.
I don't particularly think that it's helpful because of all the reasons that you said. And you're right. It doesn't give anybody a place to grow from their mistakes or experience grace, not necessarily in a Christian way, but grace in terms of just being able to admit that they were wrong and try again, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think cancel culture, whether it's inside the church or outside of it, is not usually super helpful.
Whoa, I never even thought about it till you just said the word grace. But that's a beautiful name, and it's a beautiful name that I actually know a couple people named Grace, but also it's a beautiful word that actually maybe is better thought of as holding space. Grace holds space rather than grace exists because of a blood sacrifice. So grace existing because somebody had to die doesn't really, but it even if you think about it, Laura, it even goes back before the Garden of Eden. Go back to Lucifer.
Yeah.
Lucifer got ultimately canceled for what? I've actually looked into this. Like what was Lucifer's big whoopsie daisy? Was it just questioning of absolute authority? Because that's like, wait, if we can't, I talk about this all the time with my mom. I feel like parental dynamics reflect the God human dynamic, which is that why does one party, just because you're the kid, you have no voice? Like in a home growing up, a parent is like, it is this way because I say it is this way, and you have absolutely no say. And it's like, well, if that's the communication style I'm growing up with, where I'm a party in this dynamic that has absolutely zero voice, then what am I going to be launched into the world with in terms of skills of how to communicate and have any sense of like my own likes or dislikes, or even understanding who I am in a greater context. It's like the church is trying to just put robots out who all say the same things. I've asked my mom a million times, like, why is it that you have no curiosity about who I actually am? You just think you're failing if I'm not exactly like you. And I kind of think in terms of the Christian cancel culture that, like, my fear is that we're going to do it on the other side of it. So I start a relationship with my friends or my own community where we have a different set of standards than the church. Maybe we consider ourselves more progressive or liberal, but then we end up doing the exact same thing to each other, where we all have to think alike and be on the exact same page. And if you don't think like the rest of your more progressive people, and again, it becomes this like assembly line of acceptable thought. And I'm like, wait, why can't we all think like inventors and always be trying to think new thoughts instead of making sure that all of our beliefs fit the whatever community we happen to find ourselves in?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes so much sense. And I just have to say, Day, you know, you said you weren't an Enneagram, or that you wanted to be an Enneagram 4, and you sure sound a lot like one, a deep thinker and somebody who can really process things and be creative about the way that they're thinking things. Because you're right, like the way that we're taught is very black and white, good or bad. We call that binary or dualistic thinking. And, you know, the thing that religion understands, even though they might not say it to the masses of people, is that they understand that in our brains, the way our brains work is that We don't necessarily like when there's things that are different than us. It can oftentimes feel really threatening to us. So when we create rules and systems and here's how you have to act and believe and say this and don't say this, it helps us feel safe. And anybody who doesn't subscribe to that is different, and that means they're dangerous. And so then we get people like you're talking about that are canceling each other, whether they're in religion or out of religion, because they go, you don't follow my rules. And that means you're dangerous. That means you're unsafe. And because I feel unsafe, I'm going to do something to retaliate, to whether that's kind of take you out, get rid of you, push you to the side, silence you, just make sure that I'm doing it as a weight so that I can feel safe again.
Yeah, totally. And so, okay, the idea of how you as a individual creature, knowing that you're ultimately connected to, you know, all of, you know, we're stardust, right? And I guess we're all connected to each other. We create these silos that make us think we're not. And then we all have anxiety and depression and stuff and are on SSRIs and everything. I am, but
me too.
But like, okay. Yeah. So, you know, so yeah, right. Because we're, I don't know. I've been talking about this with my friends lately of like, do we have disorders or are these just like, actually like normal human responses to very unwell systems, right?
Man, I really wish I had a group of friends like you have when I was growing up, because y'all talk about fascinating things. I love it. I would say, and I think researchers would try to disagree, but a lot of times the things that we say are disorders or diseases or mental health issues are really a result of systemic things that are going on, oppression, trauma, dynamics of power and control, and it's our bodies trying to adapt and survive situations that are not favorable or, like you said, aren't super normal, right? And so you think if we're constantly feeling like we're in survival mode, at some point our body adapts to that. And maybe that's through a lot of anxiety, or maybe our body shuts down a bit, like depression, or we get really hypervigilant, maybe like OCD, or a variety of things. And so we call them that, you know, and we have these diagnostic manuals that say, oh, it's this, or it's this, or it's this. And sometimes that can be helpful because it lets us get onto medicine. It gives us some, you know, sometimes insurance companies will pay for us to get help. But a lot of times that's a way to control things as well. And so they're not looking at the root issue. They're not not going to the bottom, the systems of oppression. And like you said, it's us reacting to abnormal situations.
Yeah. And you know how, like, when you're outside of your home and you're like feeling yourself and you're like, this is me. These are the things that I like. This is what makes me feel good. These are the people who make me feel good. And this feels more like I'm, you know, speaking my native language or whatever. And then you go back into your home of your family of origin and you cross that over through the front door and your brain switches into that other program that exists in your brain where you just become the thing that you have to be in that system inside your home. And it just happens without you almost even noticing it. It's like you click into this, another program starts running and you start behaving in ways where you're like, if you were thinking of it in terms of outside you, you're like, this isn't me, but this is me inside here because I have to be or whatever. So like, what do you say, Laura, as like a doctor who knows about this? Like if we run that program inside of our family system or whatever, because we have to, or we even don't even realize we're doing it because it's instinctual, because maybe it's a, it's just a habit of the mind, or maybe it's a survival mechanism that we're not even aware of or whatever. It's a set of behaviors that have helped us get through living in that system. If you, how do you then, you mentioned feeling safe as a person. Where does your safety, if your safety exists outside of you in terms of like when you're in, when you go back over that threshold into your house or your family of origin and that program kicks in, you're behaving in a way that ultimately will keep you safe in that system. How do you, if your safety exists outside of your body like that, because it currently has to, or maybe it doesn't currently have to, but it used to have to. And so you're still running that program, even though you're not in, in battle conditions anymore or something. Like, how do you relate to those people who maybe are the ones who are ultimately making you feel unsafe, but they love you and you love them?
Yeah. I think that's a really good question because you're right. We can oftentimes slip back into old patterns. And the reason we do that is because that's how we survived. And our brain and our body works together to make sure that we're surviving. That's its top priority, survival. And so when we go back into our family of origin, like you said, our brain and body goes, hey, the last time I did this X, Y, and Z so that I could stay alive, so that I could feel a sense of connection to my family. So that's why we go back into that. But like you said, that's dependent on who's around me. So my safety is found in the rules that I follow or the role that I play or doing or acting how I'm supposed to in this situation or saying what I'm supposed to in another situation. That means that I'm having to change from one situation to the next. So we, when I work with clients who have come out of families like that, we work on finding what is called internal safety so that I can feel safe inside my body. And then regardless of what situation I'm in, maybe I'm with my family or I'm with my friends or I'm at church or I'm, you know, just hanging out somewhere, I can tap into that internal safety at any time. And it does not necessarily matter what's going on outside of me because I always have that safety inside of me. And when I can feel safe inside, then I can show up in a way that feels authentic, regardless of who's in front of me. It might mean that I have more choices available to me. So rather than reacting to somebody to try to just stay alive, I have a choice of what I want to do that maybe is in line with my values or congruent with kind of my higher self or being the most authentic person I can be. That sounds a little vague. I know this internal safety, but that is, I think, the magic part of trauma resolution work because it brings us back to ourselves, even though we've been told, you know, by church, by our parents, maybe that ourselves aren't good. It brings us back to our inherent goodness, and that's how we live in the world.
So what do you do like if you are with people who are still in that belief system and they say stuff to you in your presence. And let's say you have that internal sense of safety and you're, Mm-hmm. You're not really in the business anymore of abandoning yourself and just becoming whoever you have to be, depending on who you're with. Let's say the person you're with says something to you like, well, you know that Joe Biden is the Antichrist. And then they just go on. Like, the people pleaser in you would not say anything, or just sort of like be like, oh, and then just be quiet and like go on. Is that self-abandonment, or what do you do in that moment? Is it even worth being like, what do I fucking care about Joe Biden? He's like got 1 foot in the grave, 1 foot on a banana peel. I don't know. But like, what do you say? What do you do? Or if they say something homophobic and you're like, well, if I don't say something, then it seems like I'm agreeing with them. And I don't agree with that bullshit language or ideas or disgusting poison that you're spewing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say?
Yeah, I think that's really good. So what I said earlier about choice is what applies here. So a lot of times when we're disconnected from ourselves and we look just to the external for our safety, then we are having to agree with other people, even if we don't actually agree with them. We're having to do what they want, say what they want, agree with what they want in order to feel safe. When we have that internal safety, like within ourselves, that felt sense of safety, we can tune into that and we can go, how do I want to respond in this situation? Sometimes it's maybe calling them out a little bit like what you just said, but you know, be respectful. Yeah, yeah. We don't want to be like calling people names, right? Yeah. You know, sometimes it actually is being silent, not because you agree with them, but because maybe you've had that conversation 15 times before know that it just leads to more arguing and it actually leads to disconnection. You end up feeling really angry with the other person. So you go, you know what, I'm going to choose to not say anything because it's not going to go somewhere good. Or maybe you make the choice where you say, gosh, wow, that really bothers me. I really do feel like I need to stand up for this person or say what's on my mind. And I can find the words that I need to communicate that to a person, hopefully in a way that won't make them defensive, but you know, sometimes it will. But it's coming from that authentic place of responding to them rather than reacting to them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, but how do you, in a real practical way, how do you get that sense of safety from the external into the internal? Like, does that just take a long time with growing up?
Well, you know, ideally our parents would teach it to us from the very moment that we're born, that they would help us learn how to feel safe in ourselves by feeling safe with them.
Ugh.
But a lot of parents can't do that, or they don't know how to, because maybe they didn't have it modeled to them. Or maybe they go to a church that says humans are wicked and evil and you have to kind of disconnect from yourself. Your body is, you know, make it a slave to Christ, right? These really yucky, awful messages. So there's a lot of parents that don't know how to teach us that. So when I work with people who are coming out of environments like this, we do focus on developing what's called internal safety. And so sometimes we could do this right now if you want, I might have them imagine a place. Okay. It could be real. Okay. It could be fake. You don't have to have ever gone there. Maybe it's a picture you saw on a calendar. Okay. And you might, maybe let's say it's a beach. I'll just use a beach because that's where I'd go. Yeah. And you imagine that you're sitting in that place, right? Yeah. And so you might close your eyes just to kind of eliminate some distractions. And you might just imagine that you're on that beach or that other place. And you start engaging with all of your senses. If you were sitting there, notice what are all the things that you could see. And really take in the vividness of the colors and the shapes.
Yeah.
And notice the things around you that you might be able to touch. You know, what would it be like to wiggle your toes in the sand or to, you know, feel a seashell, feel the sun on your face, right?
Yeah.
You might notice what are the noises that you would hear or the smells that you might inhale. And even as you're doing this, you might start to feel a little bit calmer in your body.
Yeah.
Maybe that's all over. Yeah. Maybe it's concentrated in one space. And we just notice that sense of peacefulness.
Yeah.
And we might start to call that, I usually call that an anchor. That's my anchor. That's my safety. I'm feeling safe.
Wow.
And we just let ourselves stay there as long as we need to.
Yeah.
But we use that as an anchor then, because what happened is I saw you kind of relax a little bit and your voice got a little bit softer. Yeah. But if you were to open your eyes, you're not at the beach, are
right,
you?
Right.
Right.
But my eyes started tearing up. I started tearing up when you were walking me through that because it felt so good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it made me realize, like, I think what you just did was you just made us both present. Mm-hmm. And if you're present, you realize that in the actual immediacy of the present, we actually are okay.
Yeah, we're okay.
Whoa.
Yes.
But that's why, maybe that's the whole thing, Laura, is that like from jump, the essence of the good news of the gospel is it's not very good news, because the news is that like you are fundamentally not okay is the baseline.
Yeah.
And I think what you just did was lead me through an exercise that took me to the baseline of like fundamentally, it's okay.
I'm okay.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And if you notice, that was coming from inside you, right?
Whoa. Yeah. And it's bringing a clear, salty discharge out of my eyes.
That's okay. That's okay. It's okay for tears to happen. Yeah, I won't tell your friends.
I'm man enough to cry.
There you go.
It's like busting a nut, but for your heart. Okay.
Exactly.
This is amazing. Exactly, so is this the type of stuff you do with your the people who come to you for therapy?
It is. Yeah. Wow. And I get to work with some really, really amazing people just like you who are asking the same types of questions, who are doing this thing, we call it faith deconstruction, where they're kind of untangling and asking, why do I believe this? And this doesn't seem like it would be a very helpful belief. So I work with people that are coming out of there, like coming out of high control religions and purity culture. And the coolest part for me is I work with like 10 other people who do the exact same thing.
Wow.
And so we get to work with people all over the world who have gone through very similar experiences and are asking the same sorts of questions, and we get to be supportive to them and do this kind of work, what we just did.
And so at the Center for Trauma Resolution and Recovery, it's online, so people can do it from anywhere?
Anywhere. We actually have clients from almost every continent in the world.
What? Okay.
Just no penguins from Antarctica are coming to us.
There will probably be more and more humans there as heats up.
Yeah.
Dr. Laura Anderson's book, When Religion Hurts You, is out October 17th. Get your copy now. There's also 30 more minutes of my interview with Dr. Laura. If you'd like to hear the rest of our conversation, we discuss healing without fundamentalist hopping, the unique experience of growing up as you in your family system versus your siblings' experience, and how Jesus beat Ram Dass to the idea of be here now. To hear the rest of our conversation, join our Patreon family. We would love to have you join, and you will enjoy all the extras that we curate for you in the Patreon family. Follow Laura at Laura E. Anderson.